This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
The detainment of a mother in Arizona sparked protests that led to 7 arrests Wednesday night. That mother, Guadalupe Garcia de Rios, has since been deported to Mexico, according to Newsy's partners at KNXV. Her attorney and protesters say she's one of the first, if not the first person, to be deported under President Trump's executive order. In part, the order calls for the removal of people whose legal claims to remain in the United States have been lawfully rejected. Immigration and Customs Enforcement held Rios when she went to do her regular check-in with them at their Phoenix headquarters Wednesday. Rios came to the U.S. illegally when she was 14. She is a convicted felon, having taken a plea deal for using a fake social security number to try to get work. She was arrested and charged following a workplace raid ordered by Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio in 2008. Even though Arpaio's raids were later blocked by a federal judge, she lost her deportation appeal. She wasn't considered a priority for deportation under the Obama administration since she was a nonviolent offender. Rios has 2 children who are U.S. citizens. Her husband, who is currently in the U.S., is also an undocumented immigrant.
With the oligarchs in office, how we prepare to resist xenophobia, bigotry, hate, and protect children and families, mobilizing against the Trump executive order on immigration, challenge the deplorable conditions of the broader workforce that remain invisible to the plutocrats. They tell Trump, immigrant rights are worker rights, are human rights, and they won't be invisible any longer. When they say get back, we say fight back. Well, the fear that the poisonous rhetoric we witnessed during the elections would become the law of the land permeates the atmosphere in which communities across the nation now function. As a country of immigrants, we have a special and urgent challenge to name the fear, acknowledge it, but then channel it to ensure that our communities are treated in a just and equitable manner that reflects the thousands of ways that immigrants contribute to economic prosperity and the rich cultural fabric of our society. We're joined now by Justin Flores, the Vice President of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, Carlos Jimenez, Executive Director of the Metro Washington Council, AFL-CIO, and Andrea Cristina Mercado with the National Domestic Workers Alliance Campaign Director. And I believe you also want to say something about that remarkable earlier march, which has a direct bearing on what's been happening this weekend in support of our immigrant and refugee brothers and sisters, about the historic March on Washington.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I also lead the We Belong Together campaign, which is this campaign of women for fair immigration policies. And in 2015, when Pope Francis was visiting the United States, we led a walk. It was 100 women who walked 100 miles from an immigration detention center in Pennsylvania to Washington, D.C. And just last weekend, I returned to Washington, D.C. with many of these women to be a part of the Women's March. And it was a delegation of mainly domestic workers, of nannies and house cleaners and elder care providers, women who do the work that enables many of us to go to work every day, the work that makes all other work possible. We joined 1 million women in Washington, D.C., and it was such an exhilarating experience. A massive repudiation of the hateful policies that Trump campaigned on, that's legitimized racist nativism and emboldened all kinds of vigilante violence. But then, like all of you, experienced Trump's first week in office, where, among other things, he further militarized the border, implemented this horrific ban of refugees targeting the most vulnerable women, children, and families fleeing violence and war. I live in South Florida now, and unlike mayors in Boston and Los Angeles and Chicago and New York that have stood up boldly in defense of their immigrant residents, in Miami, Mayor Jimenez, who himself is an immigrant, from Cuba. He quickly directed Miami officials to comply with Trump's attack on sanctuary cities, and it was this really deep betrayal of a city where the majority of residents are immigrants, the majority of voting residents did not vote for Trump, just like the majority of people in our country did not vote for Trump and these hateful policies. And, you know, I think we are listening to just watch these events unfold and the way that ordinary Americans have just been acting in the eruption of spontaneous protests. We hope because this is a time where silence is complicity and call our members of Congress and donate to local organizations and reach out to your Muslim or immigrant neighbor and ask if there's anything they need. You know, this is a time that calls for action.
Justin Flores and Carlos Jimenez, I wonder if both of you can talk about the issues that are most prominent for the workers that you represent, as those workers are now bracing themselves for the next assault wave from the White House. Justin, why don't we start with yourself and then Carlos?
But before the Trump administration, agricultural workers were working in dangerous jobs for poverty wages, largely without labor rights, without the right to organize. And so our union has been focusing on building organization and pushing back against these large tobacco companies that control a supply chain that exploits workers. And that's largely undocumented folks and some H-2A workers. Now with the Trump administration was elected largely on a platform demonizing immigrants and spreading lies about undocumented folks and talking about a ridiculous border wall. You know, there's a general sentiment, particularly in the South, that, you know, racism and discrimination is on the rise and that these things are acceptable. Got a fear at about what's going to happen with our folks that have DACA. Got a president who issued an executive order with some very vague language about the H-2A guest worker program. And we suspect that there will be a push from the growers who are already mobilizing to lower H-2A workers' wages through the Trump administration, Department of Labor. So these are all things we're really concerned about, but in some sense it's the same situation as it was before. We're going to continue to bring folks together and build organizations so we can fight back, continue to fight for better wages and better working conditions, no matter who's president.
We're going to go back and flesh those out a bit more. Since you mentioned DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, you know, the president has indicated he will undo protections for more than 730,000 young people who have benefited from the DACA program, the DACA arrivals. It's pretty extraordinary. Your own workers and how the issues of immigration affects those whom you represent, Carlos?
We've experienced the fear, I think, that you're talking about and the challenges, I think, in multiple ways. Certainly, I think, you know, I'll be talking about immigration and what's happening with the rhetoric and not now the reality, I guess, of a wall, but DACA and workplace rates. But actually, I'm glad you started the question talking about the impact on other workers, because there's been a litany of executive orders out there, and I think each in their own way has impacts on working people, and I just think that's worth lifting up. I mean, we started the administration, I guess, with the executive orders with the intent to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, which meant that a lot of union members and non-union members could put their children on their health care plan or have access to health care if they didn't have employer-provided health care, which is something we traditionally fight for. If you go beyond that, right, and you keep looking down the line, the executive order on a hiring freeze, I mean, I can't tell you how. Well, and I guess the reason I bring that up, actually, is let me remind listeners, in case they're not aware, think about and remember who we're talking about when we're talking about these workforces. In our federal sector, a third of that workforce are actually veterans. And I'm going to keep talking about that. But so, you know, there were reports here in D.C. and in our region of people that were scheduled to have interviews, were looking at the prospect of having a career after their time in service, and interviews were getting canceled. They no longer had any viability of having employment that was meaningful. You have agencies like the Department of Veteran Affairs that are, you know, chronically, there's been reporting over the years how understaffed it is, people that need those services. So to cut off the hiring, just cold turkey, if you will, was very disruptive, and I think many sad stories you hear, and this is the theme across the executive orders on immigration. I mean, certainly we also have union members in this region that are beneficiaries of the DACA program. More importantly, I think what it signals is that we're going back to an enforcement-only culture that has been proven to not work. I mean, we have a broken immigration system, but you know, to implement a set of policies that will punish is really, I think, dangerous. And I think our folks in many industries are familiar with RAGE or have heard of it and are scared for obvious reasons. You know, what does it mean that a parent takes their child to school, goes to work, and all of a sudden, imagine there's a raid and you get deported and, you know, it's 6 p.m. somewhere in a classroom and people are trying to find a parent, have no idea what's happened, right? And I mean, you can go down line by line and I'll stop, but, you know, it's pretty drastic what's happening. And so obviously our mission as unions is to fight for our members and to represent them. And in this situation, you know, this is one that we're going to have to figure out how to fight and protect our members, you know, across, you know, all of these executive orders.
The whole question of human mobility, what forces it? And who the people are. And why don't we go back to Andrea Cristina Mercado, who again is with the National Domestic Worker Alliance.
There are over 200 million migrants around the world. So it has, you know, we live in a time where we have multinational corporations and resources, money travels across the globe at lightning speed. But we've moved to really criminalize this act of migration. You know, historically, immigrants have been scapegoated for economic downturns or different political issues. And I think that that's one of the reasons why we really were, you know, within We Belong Together and the base of domestic workers that I work with was so heartened by the message that Pope Francis was elevating around the need for compassion for migrants and for us to really think about, like, what does it take for somebody to leave their country and everything that they know and leave their children and the reasons why people are pushed, whether it's violence or economic desperation or war. You know, what does it mean for us in the United States, one of the richest countries in the world? You know, how could we with any conscience turn our back on refugees given our role in causing some of these conditions? I mean, I think it is a fundamentally important question for us to really grapple with. I think it's a real question. I mean, I know one of the things that we've certainly been trying to draw attention to is, you know, right, and it's been going on for some time, like we jail women and children in family detention centers who are fleeing violence, who are applying for political asylum and coming to our countries as refugees. And I think it is a moment for us to really do some soul searching on our values and what we're going to stand for as a nation. And I think that's why it's so important that people are really taking action and not just expressing themselves on social media or on Facebook, but are really, you know, taking action around the country and not just in the big cities. We're seeing record turnout in Georgia and in New Mexico, and I think it was true for the Women's March, but it's also been true on how people are responding to this horrific ban on Muslim refugees.
Justin Flores, I want you to go back. You mentioned a number of things. You mentioned H-2A workers. You mentioned the issue of wage rates, what will happen with guest workers, how your membership, the people who grow our food, are essentially possibly to be affected by the reactionary policies of the White House.
One of the big lies of the Trump campaign, you know, was to sort of paint undocumented immigrants as some negative force in the country, and you know, hiding the fact that the overwhelming majority of folks that work in agriculture that feed this nation are undocumented. And without them, the economies of many places, particularly in eastern North Carolina, wouldn't work. But there are also a group of folks that come up on a visa, mostly from Mexico, called the H-2A visa. And that program is a federal program and has a federal set wage rate. Last year, that rate was $10.72 in North Carolina. It goes by state. But there's been a history of Republican administrations being lobbied by the agricultural folks to lower those wages. They say the program costs too much, that we need to lower the regulations and the costs of the H-2A program. But basically what they mean is we want to lower wages. So the Bush administration in early 2009 lowered the wages, and most folks in North Carolina were making $7.25. Working in, you know, 90-degree heat, picking cucumbers, strawberries, tobacco, and sweet potatoes later on in the season. And it's work that is, you know, really hard work. It's skilled work. It's dangerous work. And it's work that deserves a fair wage, and wages should be going up, not down.
Carlos Jimenez, you touched on the issue, which I'm not sure that people have paid enough attention to, of the freeze in public sector employment, which, of course, through attrition and other things, will be additionally a significant decrease. Talk about the loss of those jobs. Talk more about the people who are vying for those jobs and more about the veterans that you mentioned that are likely, when they come home, how we love our veterans, except when it comes to housing, except when it comes to health care, except when it comes to employment. Just develop that more for us.
You know, President Obama and, frankly, previous administrations before that, to their credit, had really made, I think, efforts to open up the federal workforce to returning veterans, and you know, have been, you know, there have been executive orders and directives, I think, aimed at trying to make sure that there actually was meaningful jobs and good jobs that our veterans could have when they came back. You know, we've seen a steady uptick in employment of veterans in the workforce. You know, so, I mean, the government is expansive, and I think the other thing I should note for listeners is that the federal workforce is not confined to the District of Columbia, Virginia, and Maryland, which is that actually California, Texas, and other states, frankly, there's large populations of the federal workforce base there. And that's, you know, because you have different agencies, whether it's agencies responsible for ensuring that wage theft isn't happening in workplaces, to ensuring that there's safe operating conditions in the workplace. You know, to that effect, I think 2016 was dubbed, and this is because of the work of public servants, right, the federal workforce, 2016 was dubbed the safest year for mines in America, right? We had less deaths than we historically have last year, and that's because of these rules that were implemented that said that people needed to be provided basic safety equipment, you know, and there was enforcement. So, you know, when you're talking about the federal workforce, you're talking about people like that are tasked with protecting the public and working people. And so to freeze that into, frankly, you know, the indications suggest that there's frankly going to be a cut to many of those forces. So it not only leaves or stops, I think, the trend of hiring that was happening. And I should also note, right, that we're at historically low levels of the federal sector. I want to say it's probably closer to the 1970s where we're at right now, the rate of hiring or employment that exists in the federal sector. So it's by no means bloated. So it's a lot of agencies that actually matter to a lot of listeners, but we often don't think of them as such because it's the little things that, you know, sometimes we take for granted, like safe workplaces or ensuring that people aren't losing their wages or, you know, that there's other rules like that being followed.
Justin Flores with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, what do you do? What is the strategy of an organization like Flock to deal with what you indicated is on the horizon, the possible attack on the DACA program, the lowering of wage rates and protections such as they are to begin with of H-2A workers, creation of the wall, the gutting of regulations. what is to be done? And Carlos Jimenez as well. You come from a city where the mayor has a kind of sanctuary concern, Washington, D.C. What does organized labor do there to stand in solidarity with our immigrant brothers and sisters and to protect the rights of, as we started with, immigrant rights are workers' rights. Workers' rights are human rights. Justin Flores?
Well, in our case, we're going to continue to build our union and recognize that, you know, the government regulations are key, and what the government does is very important to the lives of our members and everybody in this country. But particularly in agriculture, the whole supply chains of these huge multinational corporations are really controlled in a few hands. And so we're going to continue to build our union, push back against wage theft and unsafe work conditions on the job, keep pushing for these big companies, in particular in North Carolina. You've got Reynolds American and Altria and other large tobacco companies that make a lot of money while farm workers are being exploited in the fields. So that work is just going to continue, regardless of who's in the White House. But I think the same applies, whether we're dealing with, you know, wages in the workplace, or whether we're dealing with immigration enforcement, whether we're dealing with wasting huge sums of money on an impossible border wall, or whether they're talking about taking the future away from bright young Americans. You know, we're just going to keep building our organization and making sure that we're ready to fight back. We're going to be pushing, regardless of this unconstitutional sanctuary city executive order. We're going to continue to be talking to folks at the local level to try to stop wasting local law enforcement resources on profiling and trying to find undocumented immigrants when local police should be focusing on fighting crime and dealing with the issues that are really important to local folks. So, you know, wherever it is, whatever the issue is, you know, we continue to believe the solution is to bring people together, to organize ourselves well, and to push back. The key thing that both agricultural workers and folks with DACA and really everybody out there, undocumented or folks who employ undocumented folks, I think that it's really important to change the narrative. Or without undocumented folks in eastern North Carolina, the economy would be a disaster. There would be not only nobody to pick the crops, but the economy is driven by the dollars that are spent by those undocumented workers at, you know, stores and cars and you name it. So we really need to change the narrative, make sure people stop believing this nonsense that immigrants are bad and that they're taking jobs and that, you know, there's a simple solution of building walls and spending billions and billions of dollars on enforcement, but that the folks that we're talking about are our neighbors, our coworkers, and really important people of the community. And in that way, we can really continue to build allies and have a strong network of folks ready to keep fighting back, as we've seen, you know, all these terrible things that Trump's been trying to do with these executive orders has been met with some real resistance. And I think we keep growing that and we'll keep doing that. And it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to go as nobody's going to go down this road easily, and nobody's going to let this administration demonize our community without a real pushback.
And Carlos, the last word just for this moment on the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think our work is going to focus on talking to, frankly, we're going to start talking to all of our members, immigrant and non-immigrant, about what's happening, you know, training or reminding them if they already know about their rights in their workplace and what they can do, how to take on these issues when things happen. But I think, as you noted, right, we're also going to be working with Mayor Bowser and elected officials who have taken a pretty strong stance on this and in essence saying we don't want our local police departments to become de facto border and custom patrol agents, because that will break the relationship and trust that our communities have with our police department, which, you know, is a critical thing for public safety and other things. But I think, you know, and I think Justin was speaking to it, I think our job is to organize. and to continue to fight and to not remember that, you know, we have to be running campaigns to raise wages and improve conditions. But I think we have to do it now in a way that focuses the attention of people and I think speaks to the challenges that they're seeing in their lives economically. But really, I think, paint a picture of who's responsible for what's happening in their lives and the loss of money and just, you know, the income that people saw in the past. Why is it gone? And really, I think, get to this idea that if you know, it's not people below them that are causing the problem, though, you know, that there's a correlation. It's actually, they have to look up. There are people responsible for the driving down of standards. And I think it's our job to organize people to improve their lives and continue to do that more so than ever before. Because I got to tell you, if people think it's immigrant workers that are causing wages to go down, and not corporations and not people making profits, I've got a big wall to sell you that may fix our immigration problem, because it's not the solution, unfortunately. So I think our job is to protect our members and fight local policies that do that workplace preparation and to continue to organize.
Well, I hate to stop you there, Andre. We have a minute left. Give us on behalf of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, your final thoughts on this. And, of course, when I say final, only for the moment.
I think we're facing an extreme attack on our democracy, and it impacts all of us, right? And I think within that, it's really imperative for us to stand up for the most vulnerable and those that are in the crosshairs of this administration. And that certainly includes African Americans, Muslims, immigrants, refugees, Native Americans. I mean, I think we can't forget that he also signed an executive order to resume the Dakota Access Pipeline, a serious attack on Native Americans who have been protecting our water. And we anticipate attacks on the LGBTQ community and on DACA, that program that protects up to 800,000 young people from deportation. We just need to protect each other and resist together. You know, there's been an initiative on Resist Trump Tuesdays to really, for Tuesdays to be a moment that across the nation we take action at congressional offices, at different sites to, you know, continue to sustain pressure on the administration, but that needs to be connected to building power, to registering voters, to encouraging people to run for office. And I think we have to keep our sight on our objective.
We're going to have to leave it there. All three of you built some wonderful bridges, are courageous, heroic in your efforts. You are our leaders, and that makes me enormously encouraged. We've been speaking with Andrea Cristina Mercado with Domestic Workers Alliance, Justin Flores, the Vice President of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, and Carlos Jimenez, Executive Director of the Metro Washington Council, AFL-CIO. We will make it so. When they say get back, you all say fight back. Thanks for joining us. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.